Hello and welcome to this week's TES podcast. I'm Dave Speck and joining me is reporter Amy Gibbons. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
We've got news editor Will Stewart. Hi, Will.
Hello.
We've got deputy news editor Mary Louise Clues. Mary Louise, hello.
Hi there.
We've got reporter John Roberts. John, hi.
Hello there.
Now, the announcement we've all been waiting for has arrived about how the DfE is going to compensate for disruption to learning ahead of next year's exams. And it looks briefly like this. There are going to be generous grades, advance notice of some topics, exam aids such as formula sheets and vocab lists allowed in the exams, and chances to resit. So, Mary Louise, problem solved, is it?
Well, sadly not. We were hoping that everything would be covered, but actually, I mean, obviously this has been welcomed and goes some way to solving some of the problems, but the kind of big issue, which head teachers have been talking about this week and unions for some weeks now, is this issue around differential learning. So as we know, COVID cases have hit different parts of the country, yes, in different numbers. Yeah. So pupils have been impacted disproportionately depending on where they live. Some pupils have completed three periods of self-isolation, we've heard. So the question still remains, kind of how can the exams be fair for students in different parts of the country, yeah, who've had different amounts of teaching time, different amounts of learning. And that issue has not been addressed with, yeah, the announcement this week. They've set up, DfE announced it's setting up an expert group. We don't know who's going to be chairing that, who's on it yet. Several people have said, it feels like kicking the can down the road. Dame Glenn and Stacey described it as one of the most intractable and difficult problems, yeah, that we face. And she's said, you know, we're looking forward to working it out. But she's already said that the changes that have been announced now are going to be difficult to implement. She said, we would never normally, at this stage in the academic year, we would never normally be reforming, making any kind of changes to how exams are run, just because there's so many risks. So if we're not going to have this group reporting back, I think Gavin Williams had said yesterday morning that they'll be reporting in the spring. So if we're not going to have that report until the spring, that leaves a couple of months for them to kind of implement, right, further changes, yeah, potentially. We're not done yet.
I mean, somebody described it to me yesterday as like everyone's standing in a line and everyone takes a step forward, but the people at the back of the line are still at the back of the line. So it sort of evens everyone,
exactly,
up, but to the same amount. But isn't there, I mean, one of the things this group in the spring might be looking at is the possibility of an asterisk next to a pupil's grade, isn't it? Could be a good way to denote a pupil's, you know, lack of learning loss ahead of the exams, couldn't it?
Get around the biggest problem with what had been suggested, that Labour was suggesting, I think you did the story originally, didn't you, Dave? But Labour was suggesting regional grading. And then the problem as far as the exam boards, certainly at least one exam board was concerned, was that if you do that, you start distorting what exams are for, because exams are supposed to measure something, and you go away from that and you're trying to... you're trying to kind of counteract unfairness. And once you do that, you kind of start distorting it and warping it. So I guess the idea with the asterisks is it's set apart from the exam system. It's just some indication. So, I mean, that to me, that sounds like the neatest way of doing it. But I'm not sure to keep everybody happy.
Well, no, it has some support, doesn't it? But I think Mary Baston was saying yesterday that it kind of muddies the waters, and she's not sure how that's actually going to show to in terms of pupil progression, how that's going to show to universities or employers what a pupil's or a student's potential is, as a grade would do.
I mean, I think the other problem is that even the grades themselves, I mean, it's so different from what they were before. So I think if you start to unpack what they're saying about more generous grading, I think it was Lenny Stacey who was almost portraying the generous grading as if that was kind of making up for the lost learning. But if you think about what it is, it's actually not putting them up to the standards that they were before. Those grades were the unmoderated grades, which put, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they put everybody about maybe 10 percentage points higher.
Yeah.
So actually, you're giving these 2 years a massive bonus. So there's two issues. There's you know, how do you help people that have had learning loss this year and some haven't? And then and then there's a bigger issue is what do the grades mean now? Because then how long does that go on for? Because, you know, the year 10s at the moment, they will have had their learning disrupted. So
I think the thing I was going to say is I wonder what the long-term effect of it will be, because it sort of shows that in a way that the setting of grade boundaries isn't some sort of thing that's entirely driven by what's academically right. It's effectively arbitrary, and they're set on a level this year to try and cope with the disruption. But what happens, as you say, the year after that and the year after that? I also think that the thing the test will be on results day, just how it plays with the public in terms of how many kids will miss out in areas that have been hammered by COVID and will be giving interviews saying, well, I was in and out of school from September to February or March or whenever. And I think that'll be how this lives and dies again, is whether or not the public at large think the process is as fair as it could be. But I think it's one of those situations, like everyone said, there isn't a good way to do this. It's just what's the least bad way. Time will tell, I suppose, whether this is what they've landed at. Because I think with the expert panel, it feels a little bit like everybody knows there's not a solution, because if there was, they'd announce it and consult on it now.
Yeah. But
you kind of make it someone else's responsibility and kick it down the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that there's something there that they can say to people in the north, look, we're looking at this, we've got our best people on it. But there are people, and we had a story with Rob Coe a couple of weeks ago saying there is no way of doing this. And you think that's probably what they're going to find in a couple of months' time.
Yeah. I know. I wonder who's going to be putting up their hands for that job.
Yeah. With the asterisks, is the idea that they would determine which students have been particularly disadvantaged, and they would be given asterisks?
There's some kind of threshold or percentage of lost learning that they would apply.
That's a cat of worms as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's the threshold? I mean, it might be where you are in the country, but we know even in places where there are very high, you know, rates of the disease, that there will be children who are far more disadvantaged than others. So how do you ensure that that's fair? That's really tricky. I'm not sure if it is perhaps, you know, delivering on the solution in the way that we need it to, and then have to see what people decide.
You know, you wonder in 5 years' time if a pupil goes for a job interview and they've got an asterisk next to their grade, and it's all, COVID has all been forgotten, it's in the distant memory, and the employer says, well, what does this mean? And all it means is that you had a pretty bad year of education, which in itself doesn't reflect bad to an employer, does it?
Maybe it's more important in the short term, so it helps them get onto the next level that they need to get to.
That in the short term is probably more beneficial.
You could address that in easier ways, couldn't you? I mean, you don't have to mess with exam grades. You know, like if you're a sixth form college or a sixth form, everybody knows what's happened. So do you actually need an asterisk? You know, maybe you do. The other interesting thing you were saying, John, is that it shows how kind of arbitrary the grade boundaries are and how they're not linked to academic performance. I think in the past, I mean, a big thing was countering grade inflation, but at least, you know, notionally there was a suggestion that if standards did improve, then it would be reflected. But I think you're right, this has now shot that out the window, hasn't it? It just won't exist at all for 3 years. So, I mean, I wonder if it'll lead to bigger changes down the line, because I can't see how they can go back to where they were.
Exactly. It's really hard to imagine what point in time they'll be like, right, we're dropping it back down 10% now to what we think it really is. It's just hard to imagine a kind of a political climate where they'll be able to do that.
Are you suggesting GCSEs, Will? Could this be the end for post-16 exams?
Well, I used to think, when people were saying that, I thought, no, probably not, because it's... It, it's almost wishful thinking from the people that want to see the back of them. And they, you know, the argument is they are useful because we do specialise at A level. So you need some kind of certification at that age, because it's not like other countries where you have a broader base up to the age of 18 and then you have a fourth year at university. So for all those reasons, I thought, no, there's no way they get rid of them. But now I do start to wonder, because it is, you don't know how it's going to play out, but certainly everything that was there is beginning to crumble a bit. So yeah, from that, I could imagine that happening in the end, yeah.
It's interesting that Dame Glenys, chief regulator, yesterday said in her statement that I mentioned earlier, she said that obviously they're going to be looking at the potential impact on students taking exams in 2022 as well, but also the longer term resilience of the system, which is very weighty words, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Well, all this came out in a one hell of a press release, for want of a better way of describing it, on Wednesday, which thankfully was embargoed until Thursday, so it gave us time to write all the stories up that were in it. But also in that press release was an announcement that full Ofsted inspections will not now resume until the summer, John. And I was just going to ask you, because I know you wrote this story, but that seems that they've been quite supportive and understanding there, doesn't it, John?
Yes and no, I suppose, I think is what I'd say on that. I think there's been three concerns about Ofsted coming back, and I think this announcement probably addresses two of them. So basically, just to recap slightly, before this announcement, the date was that Ofsted were coming back in January, and they'd not said anything to counter that until now. And I think heads were doubly concerned about that, concerned because they're still in crisis mode, and also concerned that if Ofsted did come in, what would they be judging? It's not, you know, you're not seeing us at our normal operation. So the announcement that inspections aren't coming, routine inspections pushed back till the summer term, I think deals with that really. The unknown still is that they are planning now to move to monitoring inspections from January. And I think that moves on to the third thing, which is just COVID security in Ofsted. How can they do it in the pandemic? But at the moment, they're doing these visits where they go in and they're just in an office with their heads, or, and they did that remotely during the lockdown, national lockdown. From January, they're going back to monitoring inspections of schools that are inadequate or requires improvement, which is described by the DfE as supportive. But I think the big question still is, how does that work in a pandemic? You know, depending on how things go in January, what's COVID rates going to be like? How many schools are still going to be in tier two and three areas? And will Ofsted, you tour around a school as it would have done, or if not, how does it work? Ofsted talked at their annual launch about making modifications to how they work, but that's not really been set out how that is. So I think that's the big unknown still for school leaders. But you're definitely right that it's definitely, I think the sector feels like it's been listened to on this. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's been tearing its hair out this term waiting for this announcement, and now it has come. And it's definitely a relief that Ofsted's graded judgments won't be around till spring. But I think there are still questions for us to try to get answers to on what happens from January and what these inspections, monitoring inspections, will look like.
And are they looking at, am I right thinking they're looking at inadequate schools, schools that require improvement initially with the monitoring inspections, John, or is that, did I read that?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So that'll be the focus. So the idea, I think, is these are schools where improvement is needed and Ofsted's here to with a helping hand. which okay, so I think is in a way, to be fair, I suppose that's what some of the heads unions have been saying they think Ofsted should be doing. They should be kind of a critical friend to the sector at this time and this sort of stuff. But I think the question mark is, we've had visits in this term that were kind of cut back to remote visits when things were looking really tough on COVID. Now they're talking about essentially going back to a form of inspection, albeit not graded ones. What's that going to look like? Are they going to be able to go into schools and tour around into classrooms, look at subjects in any detail? All that, and how does that fit in with a school trying to manage COVID? I think Ofsted will probably say more about that before the end of term. But yeah, I think that's the big thing I'd want to know next.
Could you ever imagine heads turning Ofsted inspectors away? I know that was like,
well, I mean, they can defer. So yeah, definitely. Mm. I mean, yeah, I think that one of the reasons they can ask for a deferral is COVID rates in their area. But given that in January, probably if you're not in Cornwall, you're going to be in either a high risk or a very high risk area, or the Isle of Wight or Isle of Scilly, sorry. But just moving to the 99 or 98%, whatever it is, of local authority areas, they are in an area where COVID is a concern. So it would be really interesting that actually, if I've said like, we want to come in and help you, they might say, well, I'll tell you how you can help us. to, you know, we'll wait till we've got COVID in a better position than it is now.
Well, look, there was yet another story in that one press release on Wednesday that Key Stage 1 SATs are going to be scrapped, but Key Stage 2 SATs, in the most part, are still going ahead. Amy, you wrote this story. What's been the reaction to that?
Yeah, so another huge story to come out of that press release, and fairly confusing because there are some bits that are going ahead and some bits that aren't. But the general reaction was quite interesting. So most, in terms of the unions that we heard from, there's also an influential campaign group called More Than a Score who are against the tests, disappointed that Key Stage 2 SATs in the main part are still going ahead. So for example, the NEU, biggest teaching union in the country, said that means that the focus of year six teaching will stay on the SATs, which lots of people have a problem with in terms of sort of teaching to the test, and this idea of kind of giving children some time to settle back into school and kind of build up their knowledge again after being away. A focus on, you know, a test at the end of year perhaps for lots of teachers isn't ideal. So that was certainly one of the concerns. Some concerns around as well the data that might come out of this. So as well as the Key Stage 2 SATs in the most part, as you say, not all of it going ahead, we're also going to have continued teacher assessments at Key Stage 1. Normally Key Stage 1 children would sit a SATs test and then that would feed into their teacher assessment, which would then be reported back. This time we won't have the tests, but we will still have the assessments. So we've still got some data here coming out in terms of how children are getting on. And the NEU did say, you know, the government really needs to clarify now what it means to do with the results, particularly, I suspect, from the Key Stage 2 SATs, because they're slightly more sort of high stakes for schools. So are they going to be used to measure the quality of a school or as a measure of accountability? These questions haven't completely been answered. I mean, the DfE, there was some information released yesterday which, you know, said that data would be collected, and it's important to say it's not going to be published, so it's not like there's going to be lead tables with the data in. Yeah. But some concerned and wanting that clarification on exactly how it's going to be used. So that was one of the main reactions as well.
I mean, Will, you were saying that one of the things it possibly could be used for was Progress 8.
Yeah, because you can't have, for as long as you haven't got SATs, then you obviously can't measure the progress between that and GCSE. So again, yeah, it's a really important part of that accountability thing. I mean, so it's coming back to what we're saying about GCSEs, but the whole pandemic is so much of what was kind of fixed about how the school system was run, it's just not happening at the moment. So yeah, you wonder if it'll have longer term consequences.
And the DfE has given, you know, a little bit of a clue as to why they're collecting it. So it's important that it's not being published in these league tables. They said the measures overall, so that's all the various things that are announced in this story, which you can read on our site, they'll help to understand pupils' lost time in education and support those that need it most, providing vital information to parents and assisting with the transition to secondary schools. So that gives you a bit of a flavour of why they're maintaining assessments in some form. But I think there's still some questions to answer about exactly what it'll be useful.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, look, and finally, how would you feel if you got a personal message from the Prime Minister? Would you be pleased or but that's exactly what happened to one teacher, John, wasn't it? And it's quite an inspirational story to end on, possibly, John.
Yeah, absolutely. So Boris Johnson was congratulated Jamie Frost, who's the winner of the COVID Hero Award at the Global Teacher Prize. And this is for his maths website, Dr. Frost Maths, which basically been used all over the world during the pandemic, during the lockdown. He says he's been having messages from all over the world saying it's helped schools function. And this is part of the wider, he was one of 10 finalists for the Global Teacher Prize that was announced as well. And the winner is a teacher in India, Ranjit Desali. And he's announced that, and he gets a $1 million prize. And that was for his role, basically revolutionizing his school in India, where before attendance was 2% and it's now 100%. And textbooks have been translated into the community language of his school by him. So basically like revolutionized education in his community. But he's basically given half of his prize to the other nine finalists as well. So that's quite an amazing thing. But I was watching a bit of it, and I think it's such a kind of a positive worldwide message about the value of education at a time when, in a way, the whole world has shared coronavirus and that awful impact. It kind of seeing the world together celebrating something positive and the power of education to combat it. It was quite moving. But incredible thing to receive £1 million and give half of it away.
I think let's leave it there for another week, and thanks for listening. We'll see you soon. Cheers. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.